Christmas Eve in New York City. Welcome to State of the Union on 91.5 WNYE FM. This is the District Council 37 radio show. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We've got 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out the website, www.dc37.net, and keep an eye out for the Public Employee Press newspaper in your mailbox. Any comments about anything you hear on this show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Tonight, we are joined by SSEU Local 371 President Anthony Wells. Good evening, Anthony.
Good evening, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. We're talking about a recent survey that the New Schools Center for New York City Affairs did that tracked child welfare services in the city. And apparently caseloads are up for child protective specialists, and those are your members. So let's talk about that.
Well, it's not really a surprise that they're up for a number of reasons. One, people are calling in more reports. Two, they have a retention problem. People are retiring. New hirees may not stay. And so the amount of work that's required on cases doesn't allow for easy closing of cases, you know, not cases that should not be closed, obviously, but those cases that can be moved on. So there's a number of factors that can account for the high number of caseloads.
Now, we've talked before. You've been on this show before, and you've talked about caseloads, and you've talked about this seems to me something that has to be, you know, very closely managed and very closely watched, both for employee satisfaction and for child protection. I mean, you have to. This is something that constantly needs the diligence of management to keep an eye on what's happening. Correct?
Yes, well, it does. A couple of things, though. So we've always said, or we've said in recent years, it's not just caseloads; it's the amount of work required on the cases. Okay, so I don't want to get just totally caught up in caseloads.
Okay.
So the high number of caseloads, yes, that is a problem. But also the amount of work required on each of these cases also is problematic, and hopefully the agency will continue to look at that. In terms of caseload, I mean, the simplest answer is you continue to hire workers. And to the agency's credit, they are hiring workers. However, you got to get them to stay. And that's the challenge of how to retain these workers. And it also speaks to training, giving them proper training, and having them proper focus on what it is that you want to do. You know, you can do these cases with totally the families and the children at the core, or you can do cases that are just about covering yourself. It's policy that say, well, we want to make sure that everything is covered, but is this case-driven or is it a policy-driven thing? So those are crucial issues that deal with high caseloads.
And is that... Are we talking about the paperwork that's involved in trying to, so a child protective specialist is trying to get in to deal with the family, trying to reconcile whatever problem there may be, but then is getting, you know, bogged down in tons of paperwork and making it harder for that person to do the job he or she may have?
Oh, definitely one of the issues, without a doubt, because certain paperwork is due regardless of the type of case. So we've been talking to the agency about looking at risk assessment and giving appropriate information, whether you're required to write just a bunch of stuff or you need to write concisely. Okay, so that has to do with training, has to do with expectations from between management and worker. So there's several issues that you have to address. And paperwork, yes, is an issue because for a while this agency was paperwork laden. Okay, and it was a CYA mentality, I call it. They call it, and it was a crisis mentality. That every case, everything was a crisis. And you cannot run an agency that way, and workers can't work in an environment that's in totally crisis. And I think credit to the new commissioner, David Hansel, he wants to change that, and so did Gladys Carrion also, the previous commissioner.
What gets in the way of making the change, in your opinion?
A couple of things. One, believe it or not, public pressure the administration goes through. As the year before last, there was a refugee. Every time anything happened, first thing was, is it a child welfare case? What did the case workers do wrong? What did the workers do wrong? That's a hell of an environment to work in, knowing that anytime you're getting bashed, and that has changed over the year, but that attributes to it, okay? A non-willingness or unwillingness on some manager's part to change, okay, to understand the importance of the relationship between the worker and the client and the worker and supervisors and management, okay? That there has to be a seamless relationship, okay? So there are several factors, but I think some of that we're making breakthroughs on. Are we working better together? We haven't solved the problem, but we have addressed it, and we continue to address it. By hiring more workers, they've been hiring about 75 workers a month. But the key is, how do you keep all these workers?
Right, right. And how do you do that? I mean, what is it that you need to do to make this job even more attractive? I mean, this is one of the most important jobs. And I know your members are, our members are very diligent. This is why they're in this to do right by families.
And, absolutely.
And how do we make this job more attractive to folks to attract the very best?
Well, one is you do appropriate compensation. You have to look at the compensation chair. But compensation alone is not it. You have to look at training. We've suggested that they look at the training period. They look at what's being trained, how programs are being trained. They have to bridge the gap between philosophy and implementation and reality. So those are the type of issues you need to look at in terms of retaining. And then how they're treated. It's a great indicator. If you treat people with dignity and respect, they're more likely to stay, and they're more likely to continue to be in those trenches doing what they're doing. Child welfare workers have a difficult job, okay? They have a very difficult job. And for them to do it on a day-to-day basis, they got to feel supported, and they have to be given support, okay? They make tough decisions that affect people's lives as much as they can.
That's certainly true, and that's certainly a hard thing to maintain. How many child protective specialists do we have in the city?
Okay, you're right. It's difficult, and it's a difficult thing for them to do on a daily basis. Okay, and they do it. They do it in and out. No one talks about the cases and the families who they've helped, the lives they've saved. Usually, it's always when something goes wrong or a child dies, the first, like I said earlier, the first finger you point is, what did the worker do wrong?
Right.
And so that culture has to change. And it begins in two places. It begins with our workers, and it also begins with management. They have to have a commitment to change that.
Anthony Wells is the president of SSEU Local 371, the mighty, mighty SSEU Local 371. Anthony, thanks very much for taking the time out to talk with us this evening. And happy holidays, my friend.
Happy holidays to you too, Chris. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Let's all continue to have a safe and best holiday that we can.
Thank you. And okay, we'll be right back. Thank you very much, Anthony.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. 972-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. This past week, the GOP passed a tax plan, and I thought we should listen to just a couple of minutes of candidate Donald Trump speaking in September 2016 as a candidate about what his vision of a tax plan looks like. This is from the Economic Club of New York. This is Donald Trump.
Low-income Americans will pay no income tax at all. In fact, our plan will remove millions and millions of workers from the income tax roll entirely so that all of that work that we do in Washington can be discontinued. They'll pay tax. They'll pay tax, but they'll pay tax when they start making a certain amount of income. By lowering rates, streamlining deductions, and simplifying the process, we will add millions and millions of new jobs. In addition, because we have strongly capped deductions for the wealthy and closed special interest loopholes, the tax relief will be concentrated on the working and middle class taxpayer. They will receive the biggest benefit, and it won't even be close. They have been forgotten. We are not going to forget them. Families will be able to fully deduct the average cost of childcare from their taxes, including stay-at-home parents. Because this deduction is capped, it will be disproportionately and it will benefit working and middle-class families. Got to take care of our middle-class families. The less you make, the larger a share of your income you can exclude from taxation. Parents will also be able to enroll a tax-free dependent care savings account for their children or elderly relatives. Low-income households will benefit from both an expanded earned income tax credit in the form of child care rebates and a matching $500 contribution for their savings account. A married couple earning $50,000 per year with two children and $8,000 in child care expenses will save 35% from their current tax bill.
Joining me now in the studio is Ron Deutsch. He's the executive director of the Fiscal Policy Institute. Ron has been a tireless advocate for working families for more than 20 years in the Albany area. Welcome to the show. I think welcome back to the show.
Yes, my second time. Happy to be here.
It's good to have a group of regulars like yourself. We just heard Donald Trump explain in 2016 that he was going to push a tax plan that was going to be, the emphasis was going to be on working and middle class families. And he talked very much about how they had to be, attention had to be paid to them. And now we have a tax plan that is tax law.
Right.
And how does what he was talking about in September in 2016 jibe with the reality of what was passed this past week?
Well, I think as usual, when it comes to the president, you know, things that he's said in the past don't exactly match up to the current situation. And then once again, this is the case, right? So to me, I look at this tax cut package and I see it's basically a corporate wolf dressed up in, you know, middle class sheep's clothing. And, you know, I think the corporations are going to do exceptionally well under this tax plan. And average New Yorkers, quite frankly, some will see a slight decrease in their taxes. Others will see an increase in their taxes, depending on, you know, your family composition, how many kids you have, your income level and whatnot. But the notion that this was somehow going to be a simplification of the tax code is just preposterous.
But candidate Trump is saying in that clip that as a result of corporations doing well, although he didn't say as a result of corporations doing well, but he was implying that somehow his vision of a tax plan was going to create millions of jobs. And you're saying that the tax plan does, in fact, help corporations, gives them big cuts. And why doesn't that translate? If corporations are getting help on tax cuts, why doesn't that translate into millions of jobs?
Well, corporations are already sitting on, you know, literally trillions of dollars in profit, some of it parked overseas, some of it here. If they were going to invest in expanding their businesses or providing increased wages to their workforce, it's something they would have done already. And quite frankly, interest rates are so low right now that they could take advantage of borrowing to do a similar thing. And clearly they're not doing that. So, and you've seen different focus groups and different interviews being done with corporate CEOs, and they were very clear that they are not going to be reinvesting these savings back into the business or into increasing worker wages. So, you know, this notion that somehow this is going to trickle down and create, you know, tons of jobs and be great for the economy, it's just kind of, you know, more imaginary math on the part of the president.
And yet the Republicans, not to turn this into a partisan conversation, but this is the Republican tax plan. Not a single Democrat voted for this tax plan, and it was pushed by the Republican president of the United States. As we talk about this idea of trickle down, because this is where on this show we've talked about, on this show the theme is everything is connected to everything else. And the idea that if corporations do well, the average American citizen is going to prosper. This idea of stuff trickling down, which I, you know, drip,
right,
drip. Drip as opposed to whoosh.
Yeah, no, I think the faucet's completely off at this point. The trickle down economic theory, you know, has been disproven over and over again. We've got, you know, decades of experience with this. It just does not work. You know, we need more of a bottom up model of, you know, economics here. You know, the reality is when people at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, you know, working class New Yorkers have money, they spend it. They spend it on things that they need to survive. They spend it in their local economy. And that's good for everybody, right? Because that creates more demand, which generates the need for more supply, which makes wealthy people wealthier because they're usually the ones, you know, providing these services or goods, ultimately. So, you know, the reality is what we've done here is this kind of reverse Robin Hood, where ultimately, you know, the bottom 60% of New Yorkers are going to pay for tax cuts for wealthy corporations.
And this is also kind of, if I understand this right, this is also, while no one's claiming it to be such, it's also political payback in a way based on who gets affected or where people are being affected. New York is going to be hit hard. Jersey is going to be hit hard.
Yep. California.
Now, why is that? Now, when we say hit hard, what are we talking about, first of all?
So there's something called the state and local tax deduction, right? It's been around since the advent of the income tax in 1913. You're allowed to write off your state and local taxes and property taxes on your federal return. Thereby, that lowers your tax burden, right? It brings you down to potentially a different income bracket or what have you. So this has been able to help many New Yorkers pay less in federal taxes. So now what they're basically saying is, you know, they were initially trying to completely eliminate the SALT deduction, as we tend to call it. And this is one of those when you reduce SALT in this way, it raises your blood pressure instead of the opposite direction. But, you know, the reality is higher tax states like California, New Jersey, New York, and the others that you mentioned will be disproportionately hit hard by this. Both at the upper and lower end of the income spectrum, a lot of New Yorkers, in particular in the downstate area, right? You have a New York City income tax, you have property taxes in Long Island and Westchester that are relatively high compared to other parts of the state. But we're able to write this off on our federal tax returns. Now they're saying we're going to limit that to $10,000 a year. So, you know, for a lot of people, that's going to drive their taxes up substantially. You know, both, you know, struggling middle class New Yorkers who are trying to make ends meet are going to see a tax increase as a result of that. So, and, you know, the reality is the whole reasoning behind this is almost laughable. Right? They say that, you know, we have to stop subsidizing high tax states like New York and California. But the reality couldn't be further from the truth, right? It's like New York is subsidizing all the other states to the tune of about $48 billion a year, according to the state comptroller. And the Rockefeller Institute looked at this imbalance of funds. You know, New York gives the federal government about $40 to $48 billion more a year than we get back in services. So,
Mississippi and Tennessee.
Right. I like to say, you know, folks in Mississippi should wake up every morning and say, thank you, New York, you know, for my food stamps, for my health care coverage, for my roads and bridges, because we're subsidizing them, you know, and we shouldn't be penalized for that. And that's exactly what's being done right now. And it's hard to believe that our president is a native New Yorker and would certainly understand this, yet still push for this and you know, claim that this is somehow some great boom for middle class New Yorkers.
I was two friends of mine got into a Facebook conversation.
It's always Facebook is always dangerous, isn't it?
But it was interesting because one of them was saying that you know, Obama's first accomplishment was health care, and it was deeply flawed and problematic. And Trump's first accomplishment seems to be this Trump tax plan. So they were comparing the two as like as equal in terms of, you know, important policy. And that may be true, but the health care idea was to give people health care. And this thing seems to, the tax plan seems to be giving corporations that don't need it a tax cut at a time when, you know, people are saying, well, this isn't even tax reform for the folks who are struggling to pay their bills.
Right.
So, I mean, that seems to me a difference of two worlds. And I was just sort of, we live in a world now where people will go, yeah, but, you know, and throw up healthcare as, you know, this is here's a failed policy of the Obama administration. So we should be fixing, we should pass this tax bill and then we should fix it or tweak it as time goes on. Same as we've done with same with, which we're not doing now with healthcare because we seem to be. Healthcare seems to be at the mercy of this tax plan. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a not so thinly veiled attempt here to gut the ACA, right? So it basically removes the individual mandate under the Affordable Care Act, which basically said you either, you know, have health care insurance or you pay a tax penalty. So now that tax penalty will no longer be in place. And what's that going to do? Well, that's going to pull a lot of younger people out of the pool and drive up premiums for everybody else. So the reality is when you look at the numbers on this, Center for American Progress did a report recently that looked at what will happen if we eliminate the individual mandate. And lo and behold, by 2025, about 843,000 New Yorkers are going to probably be losing their health care. So, you know, this is, you know, very much a gutting of the ACA. And I think that was clearly one of the intentions, right? I mean, they couldn't seem to get that done over the last 4 or 6 months or how long they've been trying to repeal and replace. So they added it to the tax bill. Because it was basically a tax provision. So, you know, that was their way of basically gutting it. And you heard the president say, you know, this is the beginning of our repeal and replace, you know, efforts here with healthcare.
We're talking with Ron Deutsch. He's the executive director of the Fiscal Policy Institute. We're talking about the tax plan that was passed last week by the Republicans. Everything is connected to pay for this tax plan. They're going to have to start going after Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and that's going to have to happen soon. I know you forget the political side of, well, maybe we'll get to the political side of things, but simply from policy point of view, this has to be the most unpopular thing you can do going into midterm election.
Yeah, I mean, it's really astounding, right? I mean, you look at the fact that, number one, all the public opinion polls, the majority of people were against this tax cut package. You know, we may have lost the war here, you know, or the battle, but we haven't lost the war around the narrative. I mean, I think we won that war, right? The majority of people realize this is a bad deal for, you know, middle class families. They're not going to get the tax cuts that everybody's been promising them. And certainly they're not going to get the tax cuts to the degree that they've been promised. So, you know, I just feel that we're moving in the wrong direction, right? So what's going to happen next? I mean, it's very clear. The leadership of both houses, you know, I mean, in the House and the Senate have made it clear that we're looking at massive cuts coming up to a variety of different programs like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and then, you know, they want to do welfare reform. They want work requirements for people to receive Medicaid. You know, they should realize that the majority of people receiving Medicaid are elderly people in nursing homes. I don't know if they want to make them work or not, but that would be pretty abysmal.
Get those lazy people.
Yeah, get those lazy octogenarians out of their wheelchairs and get them working, you know. So, you know, the reality here is just this is going to be devastating because they're making the pivot right now. Now, we saw the budget resolutions that they put forward, both in the House and the Senate, and they're looking at cutting trillions and trillions of dollars from programs that really help struggling New Yorkers.
We've got about a minute left. What do we do now?
Well, you know what we do now? We continue to resist. We have to make sure that we fight these budget cuts that are coming down the pike because that's going to add insult to injury over this tax cut package. And we need to look at doing things in New York as a way to, you know, remediate some of the issues coming from Washington. One of the things we can look at doing is a recapture tax. So we need to basically quantify where the benefits are going, who's getting the windfall, and then try and recapture some of that tax windfall going to corporations, going to wealthy individuals, through, you know, pass-through entities and things like that, because this is going to create yawning, gaping holes in our state budget at a time when we're already facing a $4.6 billion budget gap. So we need to make plans here in New York to address this coming storm.
The struggle continues. Ron Deutsch, Executive Director of the Fiscal Policy Institute, thanks very much for joining us today to talk about the struggles ahead.
All right. Thank you.
We've just about out of time. Before we go, we've got a couple of announcements. To find out about the latest issues impacting our union, attend an organizing department meeting at your job site. For dates and locations, please call 212-815-1095. This is Christmas Eve. This is the holiday season. Please continue to share the holiday spirit with less fortunate members of our union and participate in DC-37's annual holiday drive, sponsored by the Personal Service Unit and the Municipal Employees Legal Services. To check out for more information, please take a look at your PEP, the public employee press that has been recently sent to you. And the Municipal Employee Legal Services reminds you that they provide legal representation to members when applying for citizenship. For more information, please call 212-815-1818. I want to thank our guests, SSEU Local 371 President Anthony Wells and Fiscal Policy Institute Executive Director Ron Deutsch for joining us this evening. Remember, if you have any comments about today's program or any of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We appreciate your feedback. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Monocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao and happy holidays. We'll be right back.